evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, January 11th, 2019. Foreigners coming to South Sudan may find it difficult to get in without certain legal documents.
Those who will be found staying here illegally will be asked to legalize their stay or otherwise will be deported.
And a USIP senior program assistant on South Sudan says while President Kiir and Riek Machar share blame for problems in implementing the revised peace deal, a third party is also to blame.
I think IGAD is not forceful in holding the two parties responsible to implement the peace agreement, because that's why they broke the first peace agreement and the second one, because they know that there wouldn't be any consequences.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's immigration authorities are registering and screening all foreign nationals living and working in the capital, Juba. Interior Ministry officials have given foreigners 3 months to file registration and work permit verification papers. Officials say they plan to eventually carry out the campaign across the country. Demo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
It has been 4 days since immigration police began screening all foreigners coming into South Sudan, a process that could affect hundreds of foreigners who did not register before entering the country. The South Sudan Director General for Immigration, Major General John Accord, says South Sudan police are conducting a 3 month exercise in which they are processing all foreigners in the country with legal documents to be allowed to either live or do business in the country.
We are asking our alien to come early with legal document for verification. If you have complete all documents, are in right place, then you will be released to go back. If you have not completed the document, you will be asked to complete the document. And this will continue for the period of 3 months.
Accord says foreigners who entered South Sudan illegally or without permits could face deportation.
Those who will be found staying here illegally will be asked to legalize their stay or otherwise will be deported.
One Ugandan alien who prefers to be identified only as Yasina for fear of government retaliation says she was officially registered today, but not before immigration officials charged her 10,000 South Sudanese pounds, even though her legal documents had not expired.
That policeman came and asking me, where's your Walaga? If I don't have Walaga, you pay 10,000. Pound. If you have it, you pay again 10,000 for registration. Yeah. If I don't have Walaga, you are supposed to pay 20,000 pound, then registration you.
Yasina says most of her colleagues who do not have valid documents and could not afford to pay the registration charges have gone into hiding. Sembusi Julius says the new registration comes at a time when he is running short on cash.
Not yet now, I've just said, but I'm trying to look for the money and I register.
Accord says the process is not aimed at barring or sending away foreigners from South Sudan, but to establish their stay while in the country.
The alien who entered to South Sudan by his own way without enter officially, as I say here in my notice, we should help to acquire the old legal document to stay in South Sudan. We don't want to chase them, but we want you to provide all documents to be stay in South Sudan. So if you have a company, you come with your old document, and then you have a work permit. If you are working, you have a work permit in the Ministry of Labor, and then you come to get the clearance in the CID department, Criminal Investigation Department, in Republic of South Sudan. So you go there and get clearance and get the work permit and then come to our department, immigration, then you will be issued the resident.
Registration centers in Juba are located at the Custom Market, Juba Town, Konyokonyo, Jebel Market, Kubri Haboba, and Gumbo. Major General Elia Kumdan, an immigration officer at Customs Market, says since they began the registration on Tuesday, dozens of foreigners have been found without documents. In South Sudan, foreigners from Uganda, Kenya, Somalia, Ethiopia, Sudan, Rwanda, Congo, and other African countries routinely operate business in South Sudan, while other foreigners routinely work for various entities in the country. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Border disputes in Africa are nothing new, but they create cross-border political tensions that often affect people stuck in the middle. That includes the people of Abyei, an area long disputed by Sudan and South Sudan. Sudanese-born American scholar Manal Taha says contentious border issues may not be resolved anytime soon.
The Eastern Africa, the border issue is less than Western Africa, in fact, but it still exists. You have the issue and problem between Eritrea and Ethiopia. You have the issue between Sudan and Ethiopia in El Fashaga area. And also there is a border in terms of the land. You know, the borders itself, it's a new thing in Africa. When the colonizers, European colonizations, they came and just drew borders without a real consideration who is in living there. And you find the tribe is in the cut half. Half of the tribe in Eritrea, the other one in Ethiopia. In Sudan, you have the Nubian, half of them in southern Egypt, half of them are in the southern. Those as people, they are the communities there. They live centuries. The border is came on them. So it's
the border was imposed on them.
Yeah, it was they didn't have border before, like just 100 years before. Okay, over 150 years before. So this, and then they have to be governed and have to be separated. They have to be watched by different states, and it's new. So this historically, it's impacted these nations. And you find a lot of movement, a political movement, actually, it's on these borders. And, for example, I'm not talking about East Africa. I'm talking about area of the Azawad in Mali, Algeria, northern Niger, and Mali. The nation of Tawarik are calling for their own governors, sovereign governors, but Azawad. And because historically those nations are one nation, but now you have the colonizations split them into 5 or 6 countries, including up to Burkina Faso and Cote d'Ivoire. So all these areas is border dynamics. It's impacting the stability in Africa.
And in particular, between Sudan and South Sudan, the issue of Abyei has still not been resolved yet. And I've spoken to people from Abyei who have said, we are South Sudanese, we identify with South Sudanese. But of course, the government in Khartoum has a different explanation. They believe that Abyei belongs to them.
Yeah, and unfortunately, this is going to remain for a long time. It's like it's a legacy from different African countries. We dispute about in a specific area, and we continue dispute about it. And it's become a trigger for any conflict in the future. Abyei is going to remain a problem between the North and South Sudan, the Sudan and South Sudan. But people there, they are together. I work in the Murhal, what we call is grazing routes, between the central grazing routes and between Abyei and in Bahr al Ghazal, the Miseria and the Hawazma tribe plus the Dinka. They are intermarriage. They live together for a long time, centuries. But still you have that issues of now, this is Southern Sudanese, this is Northern Sudanese. And I don't see it's gonna be solved now. It depends on politics.
That's Manal Taha, a Sudanese-born American scholar and former Jennings Randolph Senior Fellow at the U.S. Institute of Peace. She was speaking to my colleague Ayang Deng Bior earlier this week. Mohindi Omer, a senior program assistant with the United States Institute of Peace for Sudan and South Sudan programs, says President Salva Kiir and the head of the SPLA-IO, Riek Machar, are both responsible for the country's failure to fully implement September's revitalized peace deal. But, Omer says, another party is every bit to blame for failing to shepherd the South Sudan peace process along.
the parties who have implemented, who have signed the agreement to begin with, and secondly, the regional body that guaranteed the implementation of the peace process between Riek Machar and Salva Kiir.
Which one are you referring to? Which
IGAD.
Mm-hmm. IGAD. So you think IGAD needs to be more forceful in making sure that the peace deal is implemented?
Well, definitely. Not only the peace deal in South Sudan, but I would even say IGAD should take its responsibility in the region. Rather than just representing head of states, they should look into representing the people of the region. I think IGAD is not forceful in holding the two parties responsible to implement the peace agreement, because that's why they broke the first peace agreement and the second one, because they know that there wouldn't be any consequences, right? I think IGAD needs to change its strategy, and IGAD needs to look into a way in which they can pressure meaningfully the parties who signed the peace agreement to implement this peace agreement.
How do you meaningfully pressure them?
I mean, look at ECOWAS, what ECOWAS did. ECOWAS was very active in basically forcing change in ECOWAS did this in Burkina Faso, right? Mm-hmm. So it's clear that they took charge of the situation. But in East Africa, you don't see that. In East Africa, unfortunately, IGAD is completely controlled by head of states. It lacks some of its independence. Mm-hmm. And then head of states in the region, as you know, they play this game. One president is influencing events in the other. For example, the Sudanese president has always been meddling in Uganda's internal issues, supporting the resistant Joseph Kony's army. And then the Ugandan president doing the same thing in Sudan by allying himself with the fighting factions mm-hmm. in Darfur, Blue Nile. And you see the same thing in Ethiopia. You see the same thing in other Eastern African countries as well, in Central African Republic as well. IGAD seems to be mainly controlled by head of states and implementing their agenda. It's not an independent body that looks into the region as it is and tries to find meaningful solution to the problems in the region.
Do you honestly have hope that there will be a transitional government of national unity that will lead to democratic elections in South Sudan under the timeline set in the revitalized peace deal signed by all the parties?
Well, I'm always hopeful, but the problem is that,
of course, by the way, not all parties signed it, but the ones right. that did sign it.
Yeah, those are the main ones, right? Given the current situation in South Sudan and given the international pressure and the African Union pressure, except for IGAD, is that it could lead to one of the two outcomes. One, probably it's going to lead to a situation in which the main parties who signed the peace agreement, despite the situation on the ground, they would continue to implement part of the peace agreement and hang on to power until the election, and then one of them would win and fully controls the government, and highly likely that it's going to be Salva Kiir if he runs. And then we're going to get back to where we began, right? Riek Machar would be out of power. He lost the election legitimately, and he wouldn't concede to that, obviously. And we'll get back to where we were. That's one scenario. The second scenario is that we would see true pressure from within South Sudan and internationally to recruit or pressure, or I don't know the right term here, talk to those two leaders, Riek Machar and Salva Kiir, to not to run for election in the next term. If that happens, then I think you will see a real change. You would see a real competition from within the ruling party and oppositions, that you would see alliances that are formed legitimately, and they would go to the election in a good way. But I mean, given the current situation, the second scenario that I just mentioned is highly unlikely, because Salva Kiir, Riek Machar, they just wanted to stay in power, unfortunately. And by them staying in power, that would only continue to exacerbate the situation on the ground and just make it almost impossible to deal with.
That's Mohideen Omer, a senior program assistant with the U.S. Institute of Peace on Sudan and South Sudan programs in Washington. He was speaking to me in our VOA studios here in Washington, D.C. yesterday.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. One South Sudanese governor says he's doing something about illegal logging in his state. Find out what it is when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your golden rule in life?
My golden rule is never to give up, no matter what, whether it's on family challenges, money problems, work related. I just never give up.
Golden rule: no, I don't allow men to play with my life. That is my golden rule. And I don't allow anyone to talk ill about my parents and my family.
Put God first, because in everything you need God. And as you know, the fearing of God is the beginning of knowledge.
Not to lie, I always want to base my living, everything I do, my speaking, my saying, in facts and truth.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America. Residents of Magui and Ayasi counties of Torit State have been raising concerns over illegal logging of trees in the area for some time now. Torit Governor Alberio Tobiolo responded to those concerns by confiscating many of those logs, and he says he's going to auction them off. As Winnie Serino reports for VOA from Juba, the governor says the money raised will be used to fund community development projects.
Magui County resident Oyet Geoffrey says several trees were cut down from community forests in Obo Kalishoni, Paloa, Pajok, Agoro, Afiriha, Owinkibul, and Omeopayams. He says timber logging started in Torit in 2016, but he has seen zero projects have been developed with the profits, such as improving local roads.
The destruction of our roads linking our farmers to the market, road linking Ayachi to Magui, from Magui to Parajok, and to Awinkibul, totally destroyed by the heavy trucks carrying log to Uganda, crossing to their market. The community are fully disappointed to see their produce getting rotten in their stores due to no access to the market due to the destruction of that road.
Magui County resident Otto David says youth leaders who visited the forests discovered that even young trees are being cut down. Trees produce oxygen, clean the air, and prevent erosion. David says the massive clear-cutting of trees is destroying the region.
We are going to lose in terms of the beauty of the area. Two, we are also going to be affected by the rain.
Another Magui County resident, Ochol Bosco, says he expected the state government to make proper agreements with the investors so that the communities could benefit from limited logging, but that has not been the case. He accuses some Torit state and local officials of being involved in the illegal timber logging in the area, including taking bribes.
Some of these problems are brought about by our own community. Because, I don't know, maybe because we are poverty, that's why we are facing. So anyone comes from somewhere and say, I give you 50,000. And then we look at 50,000 as something too big. Then you begin giving. And one thing that is also taking place is when you give somebody to go and cut trees, they are not supervised and they are not monitored.
Ochola Bosco Ringa, the commissioner of Magui County, denies government officials are making deals with the loggers for personal gain. He says he has heard those rumors, but no one has officially approached him to raise that complaint. Oringa says his government arrested foreigners involved in illegal logging, but refused to mention them by name, insisting that there are too many lists.
Some of them are foreigners who are coming for the sake of their business to get maybe their business booming. And sometimes also, because once the business where interest is, you'll find that even the local people sometimes also, they sneak in. But after finding now, so we warn them, and with all this initiative that the government has taken, now we stop.
In October last year, a Kenyan investigative journalist, John Alan Namu, released a documentary entitled The Profiteers, exposing corruption by top South Sudanese and Kenyan officials. The documentary included video of officials in the SPLA-IO who negotiated the illegal export of South Sudanese teak from former Central Equatoria State. Torit State Governor Tobiolo Alberio says some of the people arrested for illegally cutting down trees in the forests have been convicted and are serving their court sentences, including prison terms in Torit. Governor Alberio says confiscated teak and other illegally cut logs will be sold at auction and the profits will be turned over to the communities.
We have impounded many logs, and those logs we are now carrying auctioning, and the money that accrued from those locks, we are taking back to the community. And we have been telling our communities to form their committees. Once those timbers are got from that community, we auction and we hand the money to the committee so that they can carry their developmental activities than to be taken by individuals.
Alberio says if a community needs a school, they should write a proposal to the Payam Education Supervisor, which will be forwarded to the County Education Director and the head of the Education Ministry. He says the Council of Ministers must approve whatever projects are put forward, which will be carried out in consultation with the Minister of Forestry and Environment. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Congo opposition candidate Martin Fayulu says he will file a legal challenge to the official results of the country's presidential election. Fayulu said today in Kinshasa that he will file those papers at the Constitutional Court tomorrow morning. Congo's Electoral Commission declared this week that another opposition candidate, Felix Tshisekedi, won the December 30th election. Fayulu's campaign insists that it has obtained tallies showing that he finished first with 61% of the vote. The Catholic Church and foreign diplomats have also questioned the outcome of the poll. The church said Thursday that the official figures do not correspond to vote tallies collected by its 40,000 election observers around the country. Fayulu and Tshisekedi were competing to replace outgoing President Joseph Kabila, who is preparing to step aside after 18 years in power, 2 years after his last term expired. Meanwhile, international aid agencies are waiting to see if disruptions in their activities due to election-related violence in the eastern DRC will cause a spike in new Ebola infections. Medical staff were forced to stay inside for several days as violence broke out when the central government announced that presidential voting in the area would be delayed until March due to the outbreak that began at the end of July. Voting went ahead in the rest of the country. Shutdowns from previous violence have led to increases in new cases because of the impact in tracking people who may have been infected with the deadly disease. And the government's decision to shut down internet access in the country caused concerns that people fleeing the area or commuting to Uganda and Rwanda to get online could allow Ebola to jump borders. WHO spokesman Tariq Jasarevich tells my colleague Paul Alexander that so far there have been 630 confirmed and possible cases, including 385 deaths.
What we have seen in the past week or two is that there is a decrease in number of new cases in Beni, which was one of the hotspots of this outbreak, especially in past couple of months. But we have to be very careful how we interpret these numbers because we know that around elections or just before the elections in DR Congo, there were disruptions in the response activities by Ministry of Health, WHO, and other partners, and we may see reflection of this disruption in weeks to come. But definitely, one explanation could be that strong work that has been put in place in Beni is maybe paying off. But again, we have to be cautious on how we analyze this trend.
So what was the impact that you're aware of from the latest disruptions?
Well, we still have to wait to see if we will get new cases, positive cases for Ebola that do not come from the contact list or that come from a contact list of people who could not have been followed. So we still don't have that, but we know from the past that every time activities have been disrupted, that would have a negative impact to the outbreak. However, even during those disruption days, we tried to do our best to cover certain activities, such as contact tracing, even though our teams were not able to go there, through the community workers. We were managing to get some information and to investigate alerts. However, vaccination has stopped for a couple of days. Now all the work is fully in place. It's resumed completely, and we are back into 100% mode. But again, all the gains that have been made could be lost if we face again prolonged period of insecurity where we are not able to go where we need to go.
Are there concerns about the number of people who are crossing over into neighboring countries, particularly Uganda, to be able to get online?
There is a concern from the beginning of this outbreak that people who have contracted the virus may travel to neighboring countries, especially those who are really nearby, Rwanda, Uganda, and eventually South Sudan. This is why the preparedness work has started early on in the outbreak. All neighboring countries have set up a preparedness system of screening people coming from DR Congo, investigating any suspect cases, having in place isolation facilities, having a workforce that is trained. Uganda has started vaccination of health workers who work near the border with DR Congo. South Sudan is planning to do the same. So this preparedness work has been very strong since the beginning. And we think that countries, especially Uganda and Rwanda, have a health system that would be ready to quickly detect and respond to any possible travel. More than 25 million travelers have been screened so far at the border crossing, but also inside the DR Congo on a major road.
That was World Health Organization spokesman Tariq Jasavarich, and he was speaking earlier today with VOA's Paul Alexander. That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Selfie Remix by Kofi Olomide.
Jean-François Ndenge.
Hey, Amiou. Amiou. Il a le visto prêt.
Ouais.
Allez, t'as polité.
Vincent Gomez.
Chuma, allez. Chuma, chuma.
Ndenge le visto prêt.
Allez, t'as polité.
Chuma, chuma.
Confia lo visto prêt.
Allez, t'as polité.
Amen du Bakayoko, l'homme du peuple.
Bame photo! Ouka Kingo! Dans ses gamoquets! Toi, de selfie!
Écotité! Écotité!
Chabani!
Écotité!
Milade!
Écotité! Écotité! Écotité!
Hugues Henri!
Écotité! Écotité!
We've been listening to Kofi Olomide with the song Selfie Remix and had a little dance party here in the studio. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend and join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Allez temporiser, nous vida tira pour nous.